Well, what's going on, guys? Today, we got a different kind of interview for you. And, first, welcome to Apollinering. My name is Seth. I'm your host. And, usually we have video and you'd be looking at me on video right now. But we're switching it up right now. And I'm going to be doing an interview with just audio. So make sure that you guys stay tuned. The information in this discussion is going to be so good. Darren has quite the extensive knowledge into the discussion topic today, which is going to be eschatology. And we're going to be diving into end time study, discussions, all of that good stuff. But before we do, I want to talk about the Daily Renegade. And as you guys know, I recently collaborated with Josh Peck, who is developing a platform for a bunch of different interview shows, news shows, different things like that to host those, because we're getting censored on YouTube and on other places. And so he started this this website to do that, to bring these hosts in and give them an opportunity to share their information without having the worry to be censored on YouTube. So you guys need to check it out, man. There's a lot of good content on there. However, if you're not a member, you'll be limited in the content that you can see. And so consider becoming a member for $10 a month or $100 a year. Man, you get a ton of content. You get a ton of videos, a ton of articles. You get exclusive content that isn't shown anywhere else. And like I said, part of that is due to the censorship that goes on YouTube, but a part of it is we just want to offer this to you guys who are serious about it. And so please consider becoming a member. You can check out in the link below a way to do that. So also make sure that you guys subscribe to our YouTube channel, The Daily Renegade. Make sure you click the bell so that you guys are getting notifications. Man, we got some good content coming out for you guys. So without further ado, I want to introduce our guest, and then we're going to have a great discussion today. So Darren Geisinger, illustrator, graphic designer, and author, saved by God's merciful grace, lives with his family in the Ozark Mountains. Darren is a conference coordinator for the True Legends Conference in Branson this September with Steve Quayle and Timothy Alberino, and also coordinator for the Raising Up the Remnant Conference this December in Potosi, Missouri, featuring Michael Lake and Stephen Pidgeon, among others. Darren also helps others create books that the Father has laid out on their hearts, owner of King's Custom Covers. This company creates book cover designs, lays out the entire interior, and even uploads files to Amazon. All you need is a Word doc, and his website is www.kingscustomcovers.com. Darren, how's it going tonight, man?
That's great. It's great. Yeah, I'm glad to be on. Thanks for having me, Seth. And it is my fault that we're on audio only. I live on a 50-acre homestead in the middle of nowhere, and so we're lucky to get the audio going. But there is fiber coming down this middle of nowhere road. So by the end of this year, they're saying we're gonna have a fiber connection. So I don't think people are missing anything by not seeing my ugly mug anyway. So the fiber's coming, though.
Well, man, all I can say is it's super good to hear your voice. I'm super excited to have you on. So like I always do with my first-time guests, I kind of want to hear a little bit about your testimony. And we were talking a little bit beforehand about your testimony, that it may not be the most exciting thing anymore or anyway, but I think our testimonies really give a foundation for the research, the work that we're doing, and so it kind of gives our audience a good opportunity to hear how you are doing what you're doing today. So if you don't mind, I'd like to start with that, and then we'll get into some of the more eschatological questions.
Cool. Yeah, I grew up in Northeast Ohio, and my parents moved to a farm and I was kind of a surprise birth to add to my father's angst about being on a farm for the first time. And it was really stressful. They didn't know Christ. It got to a major breaking point. And somewhere along the line in my early years, they found God, or at least they tried to find him and started a lot of church hopping. I saw every kind of church you can imagine. And there wasn't a lot of satisfaction in it. It seemed like we were going through the motions as they were working out the bugs. But eventually we moved off the farm, moved to the suburbs, and I started dating a preacher's daughter, and she was kind of not all that, but her father and her uncle were both pastors, so I was going to church. She played the piano at the church, so I made sure I was there every Sunday to be with her. And I just remember I think I was a senior in high school, and I'm sitting in the back row, you know, as far from everybody as I can, and I was pretty leaning forward, and I just remember running through my head, just going, "Whoa, wait, this stuff is really real. This is real. Like this stuff I've been hearing about, this is not make believe." So, towards the end of my senior year, I made a commitment for Christ, and I probably kept me on the straight and narrow as I went off to art school at the Art Institute of Pittsburgh, and just kind of kept working on it. It was the start of a long, bumpy road. I wish I could say I made less mistakes, but it's all to the credit of Father. He is so merciful and law and patient with me. I should have been smited a long time ago, Seth, but he just keeps working on me. He's going to be faithful to complete the work he started. And I'm relying on him more and more every day.
Well, man, you're preaching to the choir as a married man and a father of two. Man, I feel like every day I should be going to hell, but you're so right that it is by God's grace and his mercy that we get to wake up. And I'm so thankful that his mercies are new every day, you know, because life is tough. I make a lot of mistakes. But my first question for you is just kind of based off your lifestyle, how was it going from being raised on the farm to moving to Pittsburgh?
Oh, well, you know, it was a relief to get off the farm, actually. And that actually has some pertinent conversation to it, because when I came home in fifth grade, the lights were out, the phone was off, and we had to do like a sheriff's auction sale of the whole property. It was very embarrassing and trying for everybody. And by the time we got off of that property, I swore I would never do anything like that again. Well, you fast forward all the way into, you know, my 40s, and I have my lovely wife, Nikki, and we're in a big suburban house in Cleveland, Ohio, with no yard whatsoever to grow anything. House takes up the whole, and we're just like, this isn't what God designed. We're supposed to be more self-sustaining than this. And so one thing led to another, and now I've got 50 acres, and I've got cows and sheep and chickens and a huge garden that we're about to go in, and swore I wouldn't do it. But I think Father laughs at those kinds of vows. And once in a while, I was like, oh, yeah, you think you're not going to go back to that? I'll show you. So, but that's important to kind of my whole message that he's really taken me to now, is that, you know, when we talk about getting out of Babylon and come out of her, yeah, we kind of think of Amish people sometimes, but you know, Seth, we're going to come up to a day here. If it's not my generation, it's yours, or there's no way it's not your kids' generation, that the choices are going to have to be made. You will not be able to be in the system unless you take the mark. So I don't know. My wife and I are trying to build a property up here. The infrastructure's costing us a lot, but it's something for multi-generations, because at some point, I don't want to be in the suburbs, let alone the city, but we can get into that more as you want to.
Yeah. Before we dive into that stuff, you, in your bio, you mentioned that you're going to be the coordinator for a couple conferences. Can you talk about those and, kind of give us some details about those and what they're about?
Yeah. True Legends. This will be the third annual one in Branson, Missouri. It's this September 13th through 15th. And, you know, it'll be Steve Quayle, Timothy Alberino, Richard Dolan. The theme of is answering the alien question, because that's tough. That's not getting addressed very much. And Facebook memes it is when everybody says, well, aliens are demons. Well, that's all nice and tidy now. I don't believe that at all. That is a really oversimplification. Yep. So this is a group of people that are coming together that are going to talk about stuff the church is scared to death to bring up. Of course, no churches would bring up the alien question. Gary Stearman from Prophecy Watchers is going to be there, and he's going to drop a big bomb. He's never talked about this, but his family, his close family, was involved in reverse engineering crashed alien craft, quote unquote. So, and so I have people online, as soon as I started posting it, were like, wait, Stearman aircraft. No, he didn't. And so he's a pilot himself, and he's had a close encounter with the UFO up close. So Gary Stearman's going to be the headliner on that Saturday night in Branson. True Legends. What you want to do, if people are interested in that, go to gen6.com. I think GENSIX.com. Hit the conference, mm-hmm. the 2019 conference page. If you're interested in tickets and you can make it, coupon code ALIEN gets you $15 off your tickets right now, just through the end of May. That's going to expire. So, yeah, okay. It's going to be, I mean, the Mansion Theater is packed out. It sells out by, like, midsummer. So if you're interested, you got to get it by, like, end of June. And it's going to be 3,000 people. It is epic. It is crackling with electricity experience. So, yeah, that's going to be True Legends this September in Branson at the Mansion Theater. Yep.
Yeah, and, oh, man, I need to talk to my wife about that because I've been wanting to go. They've been doing that for what, 2 or 3 years now?
Third one.
Yeah. I've been wanting to go since their first one. And it's such a long drive, and then having two kids, it's so far. But if you guys are listening to this, gosh, that conference is going to be amazing. And the topic that they're bringing up, the alien discussion, actually, I did an interview with Stephen Bancars last night, and we talked about aliens at length and how the church needs to address it, because if you guys know Stephen's story, that's how he got involved in the occult. And so if we don't have a good biblical understanding of these fringe topics, it's super easy to get duped and, you know, fall for the lie and the deception that's coming. Darren, what was the other conference that you mentioned?
Well, this is a first annual one, and it's going to be kind of the opposite of True Legends. It's only going to be for 300 adults, but it's in a beautiful lodge in Potosi, Missouri. It's like for 300 adults can sit there. But, you know, the food will be included, and True Legends isn't like that. You have to go out in Branson to get your food. So this is kind of like a go to the resort. You stay in the resort and watch all the presentations right there. So you can go to raisinguptheremnant.com if you're interested in that. Now, why that was born was that I was coming out of True Legends, and everybody would say, fantastic, scary information. Whoa, oh my goodness. All right, now what do we do? And honestly, we weren't providing those answers very well at True Legends. It's a great format to identify, know thy enemy, so to speak. It's invaluable. Yeah. You're not going to get the information anywhere else. But then a lot of people are saying, okay, what do I do now? So my wife and I teamed up with Victoria and Ryan Lucas and invented something called Raising Up the Remnant. And so we're hoping it's an annual at the end of December, which is an interesting time slot. I think it's the only time that there isn't other conferences. So why I like that time slot. But yeah. It's basically so if you want to get out of Babylon, if you want to start becoming more self-sufficient, if you actually believe troubled times are coming, what do I do? How do I get chickens? How do I get starter plants? What would I want to do if Walmart and the ATMs are suddenly not working 10 years from now? How do I want to do that? I know it's kind of scary. I don't call it prepping. I hate the word prepping. I prefer responsible plan. I prefer responsible planning. Okay. But at some point, we all know it's going down. We know. I know it's been said for a long time, but last year at True Legends Conference, David Knight of InfoWars was the Saturday night headliner, and he said, you know, every 72 years there's a grand turning, and it's in Russia, France, Italy, the US, and you look at every 72 years in all of those countries what happens, and we are at the late 20s due for our grand turning. And whatever's coming, I think Raising Up the Remnant is going to be a good format for all right. When might we have to actually put down our cell phones? When might we actually not be able to go to Walmart anymore? At the same time, though, it's also not fear-based. It's like, what are the remnants? We're supposed to be able to do exploits, Seth, during those days. Yeah. So it's not like just hide in a bunker. Hey, let's bring it. Let's take it to the enemy, though, you know, but it's going to take a lot of equipping and training if we're going to get there. So, okay, those are my two conferences, True Legends, answering the alien question, and then Raising Up the Remnant. That's if you want to start figuring out what you got to do when times get tough.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so important. And my wife and I are getting into that more and more as we study the end times. And that's kind of where I want to take the conversation next, is talking about some of these eschatological viewpoints. And so, Darren, can you give us an overview of eschatology? What is eschatology? What are some of the viewpoints? What viewpoint do you ascribe to? And then I want to get into your book a little bit. So let's start with eschatology, though.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I I should pull up the term so I don't mess it up. So because I'm no scholar, but it's basically it's the prediction of end times, interpreting scripture to figure out the final judgment of man, what happens to our souls, and what's that literally going to look like? How, why, and where, and when? And so some of the terms are, you know, your pre-trib, mid-trib, post-trib, and there's also what is the preterist view is very interesting out there too. Yeah. So, you know, honestly, I'm grieved enough for what goes on in Facebook. I don't need to divide the believers, you know, on this topic, but I definitely come out on post-trib. I think that I'm not even sure there's such a thing as a rapture, you know, because people say that we will not see wrath or whatever. So when the golden bowls of wrath are poured out, some people say, well, that's when we will be, Christ's foot will touch down on the Mount of Olives and we will be taken up, and then the golden bowls of wrath are poured out.
Right.
That's one way of kind of looking at it. I kind of think if you are a true believer, you will probably be martyred before those bowls are poured out anyway.
Yeah.
So if you are interested at all in what I'm talking about right now, I highly recommend something. You can go to YouTube and watch the Fuel Projects series on Revelation. It's like 20 or 25 short little videos. They're like 5 minutes long, and they just kind of break down Revelation all the way to the golden bowls of wrath poured out.
Wow.
Very cool. The first one's called We Will Have Tribulation. And honestly, when you watch this, after the first or second video, you're going to say, wait. People are thinking that the fat, lazy mega churches of the USA are going to get whisked out of here before there's trouble. We have no, oh my goodness. if you look at history since Christ came, people have been martyred and killed for their faith ever since then. But this is where we're going in the mega church. Yeah, we're going to get raptured out before there's trouble. And I just say to people, the people in other countries right now, China and Africa, that are getting martyred and tortured to death today for their faith, where's their rapture? If they're getting tortured, why aren't they looking at the sky and going, why am I going through this? Where's my rapture? Someone on Facebook said to me, well, wait, you can't use that. People have been getting martyred ever since the time of Christ. I said, that's exactly my point. No, I think we, so Seth, this, okay, I don't want to go on, but we should prepare. We should prepare like there is no rapture and believe like there is. Fine. If I'm up in the sky with a pre-tribber, I'm going to high five you and go, fee you. Yeah. I can't believe it that we didn't have to go through tribulation. It doesn't make sense to me when the disciples had to be crucified upside down and you know, the Colosseum and all that. So the Fuel Projects series on Revelation, you just hit YouTube and hit Fuel Pod Projects Revelation. It's really, really well done. So
awesome.
Anyway, yeah.
That's great stuff. So, you know, just going back to the eschatology a little bit, that, you know, there is pre-trib, there's post-trib, there's amillennialism. And it really all depends on, you know, if you also go to YouTube, there's a good Dr. Mike Heiser has a good video on eschatology and how there's issues with and assumptions that each viewpoint takes. So I like how you said that, though, like hope that there is a rapture, but prepare like there's not. And I do think that Jesus wants us to prepare. I mean, he said in his word, occupy until I come. And so, you know, if we're sitting here as escapists, you know, just living our lives, not thinking about the future and what could possibly happen, I don't think that's a responsible way to go about this. So I definitely think there's merit behind what you're saying. Now, you're talking about, you've mentioned it a couple times, coming out of Babylon. What does that mean to you?
Well, I mean, the way things are going with Agenda 21 and globalism and the cities, they really, if you've seen Ready Player One, just the city that they show pictured right in there, I mean, that's what they want. They want to cram as many people into the cities as they possibly can. I don't know, to protect the planet, because they're tree hugging. They like the planet more than people. And they're going to try to get everybody into the cities and get us all dependent. And so when the mark comes out, there'll be almost nobody that can actually refuse it. There'll be no alternative. They hate the idea of people who are rejecting the medical system, rejecting vaccines, starting to grow things again, saying no to insurance and radical idea like my God is going to watch over me types of stuff. Oh, they hate that. They want you completely dependent upon them. And so I believe there's going to be a great undoing of the global financial economy probably before anything else gets started. It's just going to be a Black Friday where everything goes down, and at that point people will have to sleep in the bed that they made. So getting out of, I just think, okay, so I hate prepping. I'm not into that. I'm not teaching my kids anything about prepping, but I think that Father's Design is one return to more simple, grow your own, get out of the city, be free, have an escape hatch to freedom. If there's a tough choice and they say, hey, you got to come to the Walmart is the temporary FEMA distribution center, but you've got to take this vaccine or blah, 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 blah. You're not going to have a choice. And so if you have a property where you can sustain yourself, you'll have an escape hatch to freedom, I say. And that's a cool, that's like the cart though, that's on the back of the horse. The horse itself is a lifestyle where you actually enjoy being out of the city, being away from the noise, being away from the commute. You are hunting, fishing, growing, and it's what you would do anyway, even if no bad thing ever happens. That's the horse. And so that's what my family is trying to do. Like, get away, become more self-sustainable because it's healthier. You're not doing the GMO, blah, blah, blah. I don't know if I'm droning on, but then if something bad happens in 20 years, if David Knight is right and the great turning is happening, then I'm not going to have to look at my kids and say, daddy never prepared.
Right. No. And I think you're absolutely right. And just the whole vaccine agenda in itself is just scary. It seems like that is kind of the starting point for total control over people because, if you get involved in that community, my wife and I don't vaccinate our kids. And so we have done an extensive amount of research into the history of vaccines and just the companies that make them, the manufacturers and all of that stuff. And it's an agenda for control. It's an agenda to control you and to dumb you down, to sterilize our society. And it all goes back. I mean, you can trace it all back to the Nazis in Germany and they were using vaccines to sterilize the community, to get rid of, people that weren't part of the Aryan race. And so, it's just scary. And I think that's a responsible thing. When you say Babylon, now there's debate over exactly what Babylon is. Is Babylon, and I think the Book of Revelation talks, there's two types of Babylon. There's like an economic, there's a religious, and then there's kind of a cultural Babylon. Is Babylon just the general society of the earth? Is it a nation? Is it Rome? What are your thoughts on that?
I think if we had to decide today, right now, it's the USA. But we're going to quickly go into such a global community. Basically Nimrod's kingdom in the Tower of Babel was the center of everything that was going on. And so that was like the one, well, I guess it was a region, but it was the controlling power. And I think we're going to go there eventually. It's going to be that's why I think there's going to be a great meltdown where they melt down the whole world's economy so that whatever they want to birth can come out of that. And it'll be the one world religion, one world economy. And you present the problems and then you present the solutions. And as we said before, almost no one is going to be able to choose differently. No one will have prepared.
Yeah.
Very slim. Yeah. And so they're just going to roll it out. And so that there, I think, will be the Babylon. But honestly, the scriptures say that the world will weep because Babylon has fallen, right? And that we can't buy their goods anymore. I mean, that sounds an awful lot like us. There's some arguments that China's posed, you know, if life, normal life continues on for 20 or 30 years, I can see China actually eventually growing into a huge, but I don't think so. It's USA right now. And next stop, global community.
And another scary thing is that the Book of Revelation details how Babylon has fallen in a day, in an hour. I think it even details it down to the hour, but just the collapse of this great entity causes these people to just weep over what's happened. And so that's interesting that, and you know, we can speculate all day what causes the destruction of this utopia. But it represents a anti-God, anti-Yeshua stance. Mm-hmm. And so it's just scary.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a Black Friday at some point then, and it'll be, you know, Friday at 2 p.m. Okay, this just in, we're having a five-state downing of the banking system, and ATMs are not functioning, and that everybody will come on and say, don't panic. National Guard will be rolled out to guard all the Walmarts so people don't loot every store in that five-state, and they'll say, we should get it fixed by Monday. Just hang in there. And you know, they'll blame it on some terror cell somewhere in the Ukraine or who knows where. But Monday will come and all of a sudden it'll be 10 states. And next thing you know, the Dow will go down and all of a sudden we'll be blaming some sort of spooky out there terror. Meanwhile, the puppet masters that control everything who want the population down to 500 million will just have said, it's time. We made enough million trillions off of the useless eater zombies, and now we're gonna melt everything down, and good luck if you're in the cities, because they know how to block those off in 10 minutes now. And it's gonna get real ugly in there real fast.
Yeah, and gosh, it's intimidating, because you're like, man, how can the world change so drastically in our lifetime? You know, but if you look at, I mean, just 50 years ago, where the technology was at, where, gosh, our society was at in terms of its relationship with God and just the morality that has changed, I see it, you know, it's not a linear progression. It's like a exponential progression to debased minds, as Paul would say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
no, absolutely.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit more about your book and get into some of the ET stuff that's going on. So you just wrote a book called Zero G's. And in this book, you lay out a futuristic world with diminishing gravity. Where did that idea come from?
Well, that's actually, many years ago back in Cleveland. My wife had that idea. I don't know where she just let it fly. She said, what would it be like to have a story where we were starting to lose our gravity? And at that time, I remember, Whoa, that's interesting. That'd be some interesting special effects. How would you do that on a story or the big screen? Never thought about it, just filed it away at some part of my brain. Well, multi-years later, I don't even know how many years later, I'm just gonna guess 6, 7, started thinking about writing a story. And I just decided that it would be an interesting, I'll give something away from the story, because if people are like, how can an end times thing have anything to do with gravity? I'm not sure that I've ever read that before, Revelation or whatever. So I use it as part of the lying signs and wonders. So that's all I'll say about that. But it's kind of interesting. After I had already written the story and I was writing that that as the part of the end times lying signs and wonders, that Steve Quayle came on. He was doing an interview on Hagman and Hagman and said that there was going to be gravitational anomalies. And then he mentioned the Earth wobbling, because the Revelation talks about the Earth wobbling it's gonna be pretty horrible. But I presented a twist on it, and I'll just say that there were so many good nonfiction writers out there. What do I need to write a nonfiction book when you got Josh Peck, you know, Derek Gilbert, Tom Horn? So when I thought, well, what can I do? I'm a creative illustrator, author. Let me do a fiction book. So I didn't want to just beat a straight linear path to a whole bunch of conspiracy theories, because that's just not good fiction. It's like, well, he's just trying to get to all these things as quick as possible. I just went, I wanted to create an outlandish sci-fi story that you actually forgot about all these things we're talking about. And then when you're reading the pages, fall in love with the characters, and you're reading about exo battle armors, and you're reading about diminishing gravity and the one world government rising, all of a sudden you get to some of this stuff, the eschatological stuff, and you go, whoa, this is how this ties in. And because if you do a lame story, why bother? So that's why I endeavor to write a cool sci-fi story first and foremost.
Yeah. And gosh, I haven't read the whole thing yet, but I'm going through it. And it's very, very fascinating. I love reading it, because it grabs your attention, and it does pull you away from that conspiratorial world to a reality that could possibly exist, but is also, you know, viewed as science fiction from our viewpoint right now. But you could totally see it with just like movies like Ready Player One coming out. I mean, it's so it's so futuristic with the you know, the machines that these people wear, and they get in, and man, it's fascinating, and I love it. So in this book, you outline these aliens as messengers. What was the thought behind that? And I want to gear it more towards the aliens now, and we can discuss how they might play a role in eschatology. What are the messengers? Why did you call them that?
Well, because they're going to come and set us really right. I mean, in my story, they are the good ones. We were near destruction. I mean, coming out of the Great Meltdown, I have the story after a 10-year global meltdown where the world loses half of its population. Christians everywhere are wondering why didn't the rapture happen? And now we've learned that we were the Illuminati and all these people that we talk about. They wanted to depopulate. And so these messengers come in. They are activated via some last resort clause because they're not supposed to interfere, but they have to. Otherwise, we would destroy ourselves. So they give us this chance, and they're going to help us along and show us true enlightenment, because they almost doomed their species eons ago or whatever. I mean, if you're following some of the stuff what they're prepping us for, if you read Tom Horn's Exo Vaticana, they are getting us ready to say that the coming alien saviors are going to be superior, and we're not going to have to preach to them. They'll save us. That's what they're getting us ready for. So these messengers come on, and at some point they bestow upon humanity the first 12 of 36 truisms about what saved their race eons ago. And now these are the things that mankind, if we want to evolve and go into the next golden age, this is the things that we're going to have to adopt. So they're remaining hidden because it's about us, Seth. It's not about them. They're the great benefactors. And meanwhile, they've outed the Illuminati. There's no more Hollywood. Imagine some sort of neo-socialistic thing that's birthed, because we won't trust politicians or the banksters or anything anymore coming out of the Great Meltdown. So this socialistic one world everything feel good thing is happening all over the earth, and we're listening to these messengers as they're gonna set us right. Now, of course, our genetics have been messed up too, Seth. So they know our true blueprint, you know, that they can fix us, but we have to do certain things and before they give us that gift of, and honestly, this is why I wrote the book. I wrote the book mainly because I feel like the genetic corruption of humanity is going to be the mark of the beast. So all flesh became corrupt before the flood. And we know now that you go down the rabbit hole that Noah's Ark wasn't just about 2x2 animals on coloring books. This was about everything getting screwed up. This was about fallen angels. Yeah. This was about massive kingdoms, probably like Atlantis and Lemuria, with high technology and mega wars happening. And all flesh became corrupt. It was not what he made anymore. And so days of Noah are coming again, and the flesh is all going to become corrupt again. They're already doing things in secret now, mixing humans with animals. That's probably been going on for a long time. Yeah. But I'm just saying the great trick, the apple, it could be this. Granted, I don't know. I'm not in the future, but at some point they're going to offer that same old lie, Seth, that, you know, you'll surely not die if you just take this upgrade.
Right. Yep. It's fascinating that you talk about this, because I've been thinking about that a lot lately, just reading through the book of Revelation and wondering what that mark could be. What could cause, and ultimately it comes down to this question, what could cause someone to not be able to gain salvation, right? Because that's what the mark of the beast does, right? It confirms their allegiance and to the Antichrist, to Satan, to the devil. And so I was wondering, you know, what could cause someone to not be able to receive salvation anymore? And in my opinion, and I think you agree with this based on what you just said, is that it has to be something that would take away the ability for Jesus to be applied as our kinsman redeemer, right? And so Jesus was he was fully man and he was fully God, but he had to be fully man so that he could redeem us to God. So if we're not fully man, then there's no way that Jesus could redeem us. So it does seem that there is some sort of genetic manipulation that causes us not to be able to be saved anymore, to remove that ability for salvation. Right. Would you agree with
that?
So
people, well, if people are interested in what we're talking about right now, they're going to really enjoy my book, especially if you have a lot of nonfiction books like Tom Horn's Exo Vaticana and the Derek Gilberts and the Josh Peck books. This is a fiction book, you know, with a foreword by Timothy Alberino, which he's only done that once, that really is a fictional look at what we're talking about. Because so go to DarrenGeisinger.com. I don't know if you're going to put my name spelling up there, but just go to DarrenGeisinger.com and you could take a look at the book there. But the main character's father at some point tells him, look, your humanness is actually your greatest gift, and don't ever give that up, because the scripture says, do not love your life unto death. You know, don't take that. Hey, here's 500-year lifespan. You can get out of it. In my book, there's this vicious blood cancer that's just, no matter what we try to do, we cannot solve it. And it's just this, well, it's just this terrible thing. And so you're so tempted to say, I got to get out of the way of that too. And so you trade in your pure humanity. And it's like what you said, he became pure human to ransom pure humans. And once, if you've read the book of Enoch, whether or not people believe that's infallible scripture or not, it's certainly a good research tool. I mean, they basically, it points to that they tricked everybody by making them not pure humans anymore. I mean, and even Nimrod became something else. He was upgrading to become a mighty one. Who knows what that actually looked like, but maybe his whole kingdom. See, I put forth in my book too, that maybe Nimrod's whole kingdom was actually going to start converting over to whatever this was. And all of flesh was going to become corrupt, in addition to what all they were doing. And so they were scattered through the changing of the languages there too. But anyway, I don't need to restate what you said. So I think that's when I decided I was going to write a book. That's why I believe that the Mark of the Beast, because think about this, Seth, having a pacemaker or an artificial leg or arm doesn't make you unsavable. Right. Of course not. I mean, I can swallow anything right now or put what, it's not going to change that.
Your DNA.
But when you become, if you become something, if you're half, our soul, our spirits have an assigned place to go when we die. A dog spirit goes where dog's supposed to go, and we go where we're supposed to go. And all of a sudden, when you're not sanctioned creation, you've deviated from the plan. And when you die, that's what the book of Enoch said. There wasn't a place for them to go. They didn't have a sign. And so they were forced to wander. And I think they just cannot wait to pull this trick. And I believe that I open my book with the Jacob and Esau scripture of the bowl of soup. You know, he was so in need. I don't know exactly what was going through Esau's body and mind right then, but he was so desperate. He gave up his birthright, his inheritance for immediate. And that's what the humanity is going to do at the end. We are going to be without power. I think they're going to pull the plug. They're going to present a lot of difficulties, and we're going to say, you know what? I'll take it. I'll bite the apple. I can't take this anymore. And get us that way.
Yeah. And gosh, it's just, you know, we're not, both Darren and I, if you're listening to this, we're not trying to scare you. And it's just, we want people to realize that this stuff is real, that it's coming, that, gosh, it's just a matter of time, really, because honestly, I can't even picture why it hasn't happened yet, you know, but except for maybe the Lord is just tearing to save the few that he can. And it's not to scare you, but we are challenging you to understand this kind of stuff. And so you mentioned earlier, Darren, that aliens, classifying them as demons is an oversimplification. What did you mean by that? Is there merit to these gray aliens? Is there merit to these reptilians? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I absolutely think there's merit to it. Now, but one must approach the topic carefully, because, you know, the main thing is the main thing, and that's to keep Yeshua, Jesus Christ, as your personal savior. Listen to him, love him, which means obey his commandments, repent, and follow him. You really don't need to know about gray aliens to enjoy eternity with our savior. So that's that. Okay. But having said that, and I think there was a wide, long swath of human history and humanity that did not need to know one boo about a gray alien, because you really just need to reject the world, accept the Savior, repent, follow the commandments, and you go away with it. Now, we're coming up to a time where the choices are not going to be so easy when these things start to come onto the scene. And if we haven't prepared our kids or our own hearts and minds, men's hearts will fail them for what they see coming onto the earth.
Wow.
Now, that's because they're not guarded in the spirit. They're not ready for this. They're not going to True Legends and hearing about answering the alien question and getting ready for this. I'm preparing my kids for anything. And unfortunately, there's going to be a time where you are past that peaceful, more simple swath of history where people didn't need to know about this. I had to preface that before we go into some of this because some of this is fringe.
Yeah.
Some people out there do not need to know about what I'm going to talk about right now. But if you know the Phil Schneider, if you go on YouTube and go Phil Schneider full interview, you're going to see a man who wasn't, I don't know if he was a believer or not, but he was a geologist, engineer,
who was alleged. Involved.
And there's a lot of investigating. I believe the guy was telling the truth that he went underground and he shot something, a tall gray alien looking thing, and it blew his fingers off. And he got to see a whole bunch of things that they don't want you to see. So they tried to kill him about 12 times and they got him on the 13th time because what he was talking about, you don't talk about. And so if you just take that clear back then, whatever these things are that he went under the ground and saw, I believe there's lots of stuff under the ground. I'm not at a hollow earth. It's a big open thing down there. But I believe that underground is teeming with things. And I've researched this for years with Timothy Alberino. I think there's like Nordic human looking things. I think there's bird looking things. I certainly think there's tall. I mean, if you've watched the second horrible Star Wars movie, the cloning center where Boba, whatever, those tall like things that control the clone. That's exactly what these vril lizard type things look like. I can't go into how I researched those and the rabbit holes I went down. We wouldn't have time for that here. Now, why am I talking about this though? Because this is not a demon. This, you know, a demon doesn't blow your fingers off and you can't shoot it with a pistol. These things are flesh and blood and they die. When are they from? I believe they're probably from pre-Adam. And I have some theories on that. I don't know if this is the show for that. We could, if your audience really likes us, maybe we can get into this at a different time. I believe maybe the serpent having to crawl on his belly and breathe the dust of the earth is a metaphor for something. Again, I'm not going to get into that here, but I believe that at a certain point, these things cannot, so from my research, and I would never die on this theological hill. This is very fringe information, but it seems like they can't breathe the surface air like we can. It's almost like they were cursed to not be allowed on the surface anymore because man has dominion and authority here. Follow me on this. So man has a dominion and authority on the surface of the earth and they cannot come up anymore because they've been cursed. Then at some point, man is going to bumble away his authority and give away his authority for some bowl of soup or something. And then all of a sudden, he's not going to be fully human anymore. There's not going to be man as dominion on the earth. And these hearts will fail him for what they see coming up onto the earth. And I find it very interesting that at some point the earth cracks open and smoke pours out to cover the earth. And who knows exactly if that's changing the atmosphere so that these things can breathe up here or not. Now, Seth, if an angel appeared to me right now in my office and said, okay, none of that's going to happen. It's actually A, B, and C. I'd be like, okay, well, my research wasn't pointing me in that direction, but I wouldn't be surprised in anything. But you wouldn't believe, you know, where Timothy and Alberino and Steve Quayle and the things I've seen with my own eyes that lead me to some of this conclusion. So Steve Quayle was told by some people that don't even exist on paper that there's as many types of entities as there are insects. And I mean, there's portions of the military that are called the men of valor that have to go into these hives and kill things that go bump in the night. And they've contacted Steve Quayle about this stuff. Oh, yeah. And there's hives. They carted a 1,500-pound giant out of Afghanistan. And the guy that contacted Steve said, my mom used to talk about you. But this thing was sitting there on a pallet and this 1,500-pound giant they pull out of a cave. And this isn't the only one. And yes, basically there's lots of stuff under the ground. I don't know why it can't come up, or maybe it does once in a while, but why is this important? Why do we have to prepare?
Yeah.
I actually don't know exactly how we have to prepare, but in my book, Zero G's, Part One, The Armor Eternal, that you can see on DarrenGeisinger.com, I definitely go into there's entities out there that are not demons. Now, I think demons are, I have had sleep paralysis before where something was on my back and would not let me up. One time in Cleveland, Ohio, it happened. I couldn't hardly move my mouth. I rebuked it in Jesus' name and it had to flee from me immediately. And that was an unclean spirit. That's a demon. There wasn't any any kind of physical thing going on there. And that's, and those are real demons and unclean spirits. And in fact, a lot of these channeling situations and these beings that appear, or they're telling people stuff, like you talked about Stephen Bakarns and the whole New Age movement. Well, are those fallen angels that are communicating with men and steering them with lies? Is this,
yeah,
what is, if we go, there's as many different types of entities as there are. I mean, I think it's a spiritual realm and a multi-dimensional realm teeming with pre-Adam things, things from eons ago, things from pre-flood. And it's complex, and it's not as simple as good guys and bad guys in the movies. Yeah. From my research, there's a lot of these entities underground that hate each other too and are at war with each other too. So it's very complex.
Oh my gosh, this is so fascinating. Like I've done a lot of research into this, and I'm still just like, I'm dumbfounded by some of the stuff that I come across too, because where the heck do people make this up? I mean, you can't just, I don't know who has a good enough imagination to make some of this stuff up, you know. And it's interesting that you bring Phil Schneider up, because my wife and I do Conspiracy Theory Thursdays, and we're doing one tomorrow night on the Denver International Airport. And if anyone has ever heard of that, Phil Schneider was the first guy who brought out the Denver International Airport being one of these underground bunkers, bases, FEMA camp type things.
Of course it is. Oh, absolutely. Have you driven it? Have you gone and driven it? You just feel everything under the ground. It is so long to get this airport. It is so in the middle of nowhere. Oh yeah, you just feel it. It's yeah. If people have to, if they're going to hear anything from our thing tonight, go on YouTube and just say Phil Schneider full interview. Yeah. And yeah, it's a little hazy, fuzzy, but if you want your mind blown, like, wait, whoa. Yeah.
Yeah.
What is going on?
So my question is, why do you think all this secrecy, and how do you see pop culture kind of preparing us for this? Gosh, if there's as many entities as there are insects, like, how come we don't see any of these? What is your opinion?
Well, that's a great question. I do think we see them. I think their things are controlled very tightly, and you can't. Okay, so reptilians, right there, you say that word, you feel like a dope as soon as you say that. They've made that so anything reptilian sounds like it's laughable. So if you were to bring that up, Joe Sixpack brings that up around the water cooler at work. People are gonna run, right? Yeah. And so they have made it to be like that. And actually, I know these. If you are a shape-shifting reptilian, they open their eyes for a second and they have reptilian eyes person. I have to tell you, yeah, everybody, that's fake. That's actually fake, because they do that to make everybody who brings up reptilians look like a dope and unbelievable. And it's very effective. Right. No one believes anything about reptilians now. Nobody shapeshifts. There isn't anything like that. The Illuminati create that stuff to throw off the trail that they are in league with reptilians under the ground, doing dirty deals, exchanging kids that these things eat for high technology, lost technology from ancient worlds, for resources, who knows what. But this has been going on since medieval times, according to my research. The castles had passageways into these things where they would trade. I know this is mind blowing stuff, but yeah, they're real things that look like those things from the Star Wars cloning center. Those tall, long neck. That's what Phil Schneider shot. And just okay. Your question was, is the media preparing us for something? Yes. So they're manipulating things carefully to make the dominoes fall like they want. And ultimately it's going to be some sort of, you know, I believe messengers, like it's in my book, Nordics, Pleiadians, who are the perfect versions of us, and they can steer us back to that. And I have them outing the Illuminati and banksters and throwing them under the bus and the grays. So I have I call them the Vril, the tall grays in my book.
Yeah.
And
interesting.
And part of the way they win humanity is, hey, these things were eating you. You were groceries, and we're saving you from that. We're saving you from yourselves. And Stan Deo, if you know that name too. Stan Deo is a very cool guy. I had to meet him recently. He is one of the few people that ascribe to that, and that great deception thing too, that he believes that disclosure will be multiple different types of aliens, and you'll see the good guys and the bad guys, and that's just going to be the way that they paint themselves as the saviors. They're saving us from the ugly, icky things too, and we're worried about our genetics, we're worried about death, we're worried about, wait, So we're like bees in a hive, and we have honey, and now like bears and stuff can come around and eat us. Other planets full of these creatures can eat us. How do we prepare for these cosmic wars? And so we're going to be all ears to these fake alien saviors, and as they try to tell us what being star people is all about now, and godlike. And part of me thinks, I don't even know if humanity will make it this far. They'll start the deception and they'll trick us, and we will lose our pure humanity, and it won't even go into a lot of sci-fi stuff. We'll undo ourselves in short order.
Gosh, that's fascinating. And I love that that idea. And that's actually the first time I've heard of that, of these entities exposing the Illuminati to trick people to believe them. That's a fascinating idea, because you go to YouTube and you type Illuminati, everything is, it seems like pointing to like the Illuminati's controlling everything, but in reality it could be that these aliens, or whatever you want to call them, do come and expose them for what they truly are and gain people's trust that way. That's a fascinating idea, and it's interesting.
In my book,
I was just going to say about the shape-shifting, you know, that I was really questioning that too, until I interviewed an ex-Satanist who said that she'd lay down her life that shape-shifting was real. You know, that these people, these demons, they shape-shift to be whatever they want to fulfill their own will. And I just
that could be true. I mean, I believe that there's powerful fallen entities that could shift into any kind of shape. I mean, we know angels can do that. I just don't believe Oprah has an eye problem. Second, you see her as a reptilian eye. No, that's what I'm talking about. No, I do believe that there's entities that can change and become other things, though. Very, very powerful entities could do that. But the way they try to paint some of those wacky videos on, I don't remember the other thing that I was going to say, but yeah. All right. So this is pretty mind-blowing stuff.
Yeah, and I love this conversation, man. This is so fascinating. So to start to wrap up our conversation here, with movies like the Avengers coming out and stuff, how do you see those types of things I guess preparing us for the reality that's soon to come?
Well, I mean, these entities are, because I'll talk fast because probably run out of time, but these entities are outside of time. So I don't know when they decided to invent Spider-Man and all the Watchmen and all these mutants and all this kinds of stuff. But it seems like all of those seeds were planted and until our culture was ready to just be like, well, being not human is actually way cooler. I mean, who doesn't want to have Spider-Man powers or these things? And we're just getting... we're getting to the point where 98% of everybody would rather trade in and be, you know, something other than what they are now. I mean, virtual reality, who knows what that's going to do to society, because people can leave what they really are and enter any kind of world. But imagine when you say, well, here you can actually become something different than you are. No one's going to anyone who refuses. And can imagine the remnant parents who say, my child is not going to lose their pure humanity. Meanwhile, you're dooming your child to a shorter life or possibly a disease or whatever. Those kids are going to be taken so fast and you're going to be killed, and everybody will think they're doing good. I mean, how evil, Seth, these parents are, who would deprive their children from that godhood, that upgrade that makes them suffer and die early. And, the elect, if it were possible, are going to be deceived by this thing. It's going to be so powerful. It's going to be a very, very slim margin that holds on and overcomes. But the Avengers movies and all of that is so pervasive. It's just it's getting everybody into not liking humanity, really. Humanity is really boring.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine being on a homestead somewhere and having to grow your own food? I mean, how dull is that when I can be a god and whoosh here and there? And yeah, I mean, no, it's going to be very hard to choose the ancient paths that's going to save you when everything goes down, when media is, you know, making everything that's wrong the totally cool and glamorous.
Yeah. Just piggybacking off of that, it just, that seems to be the intent and the end game, no pun intended, for these types of these movies, is just to make it seem being human is so dull and boring. And when there's all these cool things out there, man, that's, That's
another reason why Hollywood, in my idea of Hollywood, is part of my book too, is they take it all away. The Illuminati's bad, and all of those elites are bad, because real life gets to be exciting like movies. There are really aliens on the scene now, and we have a chance to be part of what they're offering. So suddenly they take it all away, so that you're now not getting lost in fantasy. You're ready to right. actually do it, instead of sitting right. there on the couch and watching it. Wait, they're here. All the stuff about the make-believe is gone. Now it's our turn to really do this stuff. So yeah. it's kind of a devious switcheroo as they birth their one world religion and just mock the old time archaic religions, and our cast of characters in zero G's has to not only battle the diminishing gravity and what that's doing to the world, but you know, they have to stay strong in their faith when boring old humanity 1.0 is being left behind. They're Neanderthals compared to what's going to be coming online soon, you know? So,
Man, I love this. This is so good. My final question for you is, what do you think we need to do to step out of Babylon, as you would say, and what are some tips for us to prepare for this and not be a doomsday prepper, but just be, you know, more aware, more awake, more woke, if you want to use that terminology. But what are some pointers that you could give us, Darren? Like, what are you doing? Obviously you're out, you know, growing your own food and stuff like that, but what else can we do spiritually speaking in particular?
Well, that's a great question. So obviously you don't need a 50 acre homestead. I mean, 3 acres or something like that. I mean, try not to get the big house that has the huge mortgage. Try to get a little bit of land, get a little bit of freedom, and get out from things. I would, you know, study the scriptures, study the Torah. I believe the Torah is still valid. I don't believe in grace. And I say, you know, grace is the most wonderful thing that God ever bestowed to us. But I think the mega church has taken that too far. And I believe the commandments are something we're to cling to and love. And I would be into the scriptures, and I would start to really heavily consider what you do, what you watch, what Babylon, we're talking about how they're programming, how they're prepping. Some of it, like, I didn't watch the new Aquaman. I heard that was enough programming. I just heard of the big points to say, I'm just not going to do it. I don't think I have to do it. I heard what the big points are. I'm too busy with all this other stuff, and my kids don't need to see that either. There comes a point where maybe you're not educating yourself anymore. You're just tantalizing yourself. So I would just fill your mind with the scriptures, walk according to the spirit and not according to the flesh, and cling to our Messiah Yeshua, and know that he's ransomed us, and walk holy, walk clean as best as you possibly can. I recommend two books. Michael Lake is one of my very favorite teachers and authors of anything. Michael Lake, I think he's really laying it out very well right now for people who are hungry to know about what we're talking about. His two books, The Shinar Directive and The Sharia Imperative, those are available at Defender. I kind of feel like The Shinar Directive is like True Legends. It's kind of know thy enemy and see what the world's programming and getting everybody ready to do. And the Sharif Imperative is talking about what the remnant is going to have to do in the final days. I highly recommend those, along with the scriptures. I get those two books, and I'd pour over those.
Yeah. And man, for those of you guys listening, I own those two books, and they are very, very, very helpful. Not only in the cool fringe stuff that you learn through about Nimrod and some of the stuff that he was doing and who really this the Nakash was, but it also gives you practical information on how we need to act as a church in these last days, how we should be preparing our minds, our bodies, our spirits for this Babylon rising, if you will. And so, today has been so good, Darren. I'm so excited that you got to join me. Is there anything else that you'd like to say before we wrap up our time here?
No, I think we covered it all. I just hope if people are interested in a very off the wall book that I don't think it's ever been done in print before, and that's hard to do these days. If you got a lot of nonfiction books from the authors that we've talked about, the Horns and the Gilberts and those greats, you got to get those books first. The Tight Cribs, those are amazing. But if you want a fiction that's kind of mind blowing, that pulls, it's like I kind of say it's Arthur C. Clarke's Childhood's End meets Tom Horne's Exo Vaticana meets the opposite of the Left Behind series. If you want, if you want that in an escalatogical, whatever, however you say that word, smash him up, puts Avengers to shame kind of thing. I kind of, I kind of am angry that Avengers and Star Wars are so creative that, that our believing community cannot hold a candle to it. So I took about 4 years to come up with some of the things I did for this book to say, hey, I want to smack Star Wars and Avengers in the face. I think we can do something pretty far out there. So, I mean, all ages read mine. It looks like kind of man cave fodder, but I go into relationships and whether Christians, you know, can engage in violence, nonviolence, self-defense, what it means in war to kill. And a lot about relationships. I definitely, it's not about robots for sure, even though it's 2045 and there's a lot of that. They're online now. If you look at YouTube, my stuff's pretty conservative if we make it to 2045, but I don't know. So go to DarrenGeisinger.com if you want to check out that book. If you want to do a book for yourself, Seth, and I heard you want to write some books, go to KingsCustomCovers.com. I've done Steve Quayle's books and Jamie Walden's books. I'm starting to do some stuff for Defender Publishing. I'm very honored to be working with Joe and Tom Horn over there. I'm going to start doing some book designs for Defender. So go to King's Custom Covers and you can send me an email if you got a book in you that you're like, I don't know what to do. I got a Word doc and what do I do? I'll help.
Well, I have one, dude. I have one. So,
all right. So we'll talk when we hang up here, I guess.
Yeah, let's do it. Make sure you guys check out Darren's website, get his book, Zero G's. It's so good. I'm a few chapters in and I'm already loving it so much. So make sure you guys check that out. Gosh, today has been so good, filled with a little bit of conspiracy, a little bit of eschatology. And man, we talked about some stuff that's pretty out there, but gosh, we need to be ready. We need to be researching this stuff. We need to be aware so that we can give a defense for our faith, like Jesus says, and give a reason for the hope that's in us, and or Peter says, excuse me. But man, thank you guys for tuning in today. You guys know the saying, don't be lazy, do the research. We'll catch you on the next episode.